Hello, this is Wendy Bauer reading to you today on June 15th, 2015 from the Decatur Herald and Review. This is our second half hour today, and we will begin by reading from the obituaries. From Decatur, Robert C. Basnett. Robert C. Basnett, 56, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, June 13, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital after a short illness. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, June 17, at 11 a.m. at the Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, with a visitation 2 hours prior. Burial will be at North Fork Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to the Good Samaritan Inn. John H. Cherry, from Mount Pulaski. John H. Cherry, 71, passed away at 10:42 a.m. on June 13th at his home, surrounded by his loving family. Services for John will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 17th, 2015, at Zion Lutheran Church in Mount Pulaski, with Reverend Glenn Stroshine officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 16, 2015, also at the church. A burial at Steenbergen Cemetery in Mount Pulaski will follow the service, where military rifles will be accorded. Where military rites will be accorded. Memorials may be made to Zion Lutheran School Playground Fund. Services entrusted to Fricky Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski. John Orville Johnson, from Bement. John Orville J. O. Johnson, 57, of Urbana, Illinois, formerly of Bement, Illinois, passed away at 1:15 p.m. on Wednesday, June 10, 2015, at the Edward Hines Jr. Veterans Administration Hospital in Hines, Illinois. Funeral Mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, June 17, 2015, at the St. Michael's Catholic Church in Bement. Father Bruce Lopez will officiate, and visitation will be held from 9 a.m. until the time of services on Wednesday at the church. Burial with military honors by the Albert Parker American Legion Post No. 620 will be in the St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery in Ivesdale, Illinois. Memorial contributions can be made to the Paralyzed Veterans of America. Ada Louise Snyder, Vandalia. Ada Louise Snyder, 61, of Evansville, Indiana, died Friday, June 12, 2015, in her sister's home in Vandalia. Services will be at 2 p.m. Tuesday, Allen and Sutton Funeral Home in Fillmore. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service. Robert N. Wilson, Decatur. Robert N. Wilson, 51, of Decatur, passed away Friday, June 12, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Arrangements are incomplete with Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and cremation services. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 17, 2015, in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church with Reverend Richard Welton, celebrant. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 16, 2015, in Moran and Goebel Funeral Home, with a vigil prayer service at 4:30 p.m. Burial will be in Camp Butler National Cemetery. Memorial donations are suggested to Our Lady of Lourdes or First Tee or Special Olympics. Funerals pending for today, Monday, June 15th, are listed as Deborah Chiselle, 56, of Chicago, formerly of Decatur, who died Saturday, June 13th, Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. Verna M. Cooper, 79, of Decatur, who died Saturday, June 13, 2015, Dawson and Wyckoff, West Wood Street Funeral Home. Glenda Sue Deering, 70, of Decatur, died Friday, June 12, 2015, Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, North Chapel. Richard Hill, 85, of Decatur, died Sunday, June 14, 2015, Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Thomas Jackson, 74, Newton, died Saturday, June 14, 2015, Meyer Funeral Home in Newton. Waddy and Robinson, 86, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 13, 2015, Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. The list of funerals scheduled for today, Monday, June 15, 2015, include Janet A. Dudley, 84, of Shelbyville, formerly of Bethany and Decatur, 7 p.m. in Reed Funeral Home in Sullivan. David Wayne Glover, 71, of Decatur, 1 p.m. in St. Patrick Catholic Church. Linda Jo Hoover, 69, of Tuscola, at 11 a.m. in Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Tuscola. Eleanor Jane Lewis, 98, of Decatur, 7 p.m. in Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. Annabelle Malloy, 93, of Sullivan, 11 a.m. in Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan. Mary Louise Mathis, 73, of Macon, 2:30 p.m. in Hall Cemetery, Blue Mound. Scott W. Mathias, 53, of Tower Hill, at 7:30 p.m. in Herrick Baptist Church. And Ruby Faye Trimmer, 72, of Canton, formerly of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. And now some additional stories from the Decatur Herald and Review. From the local news page, written by Allison Petty of the Herald and Review staff, "Mud Stops Demolition Event at Fair," from Decatur. "When it comes to mud and demolition derbies, there can be too much of a good thing. Macon County Fair officials were forced to cancel the final event Sunday because torrential rains had left such a sticky situation that cars would not be able to maneuver on the track. The event was supposed to start at 6 p.m., but was called off in the early afternoon. At first, we were like, okay, we can do it," said Teresa McWilliams, Fair Board Treasurer. "Then it started raining again, and there was no way. It was an unfortunate ending to what had otherwise been a relatively successful week," McWilliams said. "About 10,000 people attended the fair, which began Tuesday," she said. "That is a big improvement over last year, when the fair operated as a smaller festival and drew only 3,100. Saturday attracted the most traffic. Once we got over the early afternoon showers, then it turned out pretty nice," McWilliams said. "The lure of carnival rides and lemon shake-ups still drew many families to the fairgrounds Sunday afternoon. Swine and boar goat shows also proved successful. Boar goats are bred for meat rather than dairy uses. The grand champion of that show was Dreamsicle, one of the five goats brought to the competition by Rick and Misty Allen of Hilltop Boar Goat Farm in Fairmount. The couple used to raise hogs and cattle, but were looking for something new in 2008 after their daughter graduated from high school," Misty Allen said. "They have about 40 goats who spend most of their summer in pens with fans on them or in the pasture at night. They have a lot of personality," Allen said. "They're very social animals. So I think that's what is appealing to a lot of people, because they are so social and they like humans. Next year will be the fair's 160th anniversary. It is run entirely by volunteers, and more are always needed," McWilliams said. "Anyone who is interested can visit the fair's website, the Macon County Fairgrounds Facebook page, or call 217-875-0135. And an article written by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review. From Shelbyville, "The Chautauqua Benefit Features Auction and Music." from Shelbyville. Volunteers working to renovate Shelbyville's historic Chautauqua building have two important goals: raising funds to preserve the building and showing potential donors and the community the building has a vibrant future. On Saturday, they hope to do both with a day of events that includes an auction and a performance by the Air Force Roots in Blue. "We think it's going to be a great day with great entertainment and great bargains," said Chautauqua Fundraising Chair Brenda Elder. "It should be a lot of fun." The auction will begin at 10 a.m. in the Chautauqua Auditorium. Organizer Norma Hubart said an assortment of home and garden items, quilts, paintings by local artists, and collectibles donated by Chautauqua supporters will be featured. "We have an amazing collection of hunting knives, some with antler handles in a variety of sizes," Hubart said. Auctioneer Danny Barker said the auction should last 2 to 3 hours. After the auction, Elder is hoping music lovers will turn out for a 3 p.m. performance by the Air Force Band of Mid-America's Roots in Blue Ensemble. "They play a variety of music, including old and new rock, blues, even bluegrass," she said. Chautauqua volunteers will be collecting donations at the concert. Elder said the music event is also an opportunity for the community to see the 113-year-old building. "The building is still a work in progress, but there are things that have been done," she said. "I hope people will see its historic past and that it has a viable future." From the Crime and Courts section, an article by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review staff writer. Man denied bond after several cases of stalking threats. From Decatur, Larry Dagg, 41, is being held in jail without bond on charges including aggravated stalking and violation of an order of protection after he repeatedly called and texted a woman while out on bond in 3 recent successive stalking cases in which she was the victim. "He allegedly threatened to kill her and any man who was with her and repeatedly said he will never stop contacting her." Dagg was arrested April 26th after the victim told police that she had severed relations with him, yet he constantly harassed her via telephone and text messages, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Christopher Scalen. To ensure that she would receive his calls, he repeatedly changed his phone numbers. The victim showed the officer 21 different numbers he had used to call her. There were 452 calls from Dagg to her from those numbers. Text messages sent to her from 8 different numbers included, "If I drive by your house and see some dude there, I'm going to kill him," and "I'm not going to leave you alone until I die." Dagg posted $1,000 cash bail 2 days later and was released from jail. On April 30th, he was charged with felony stalking, a Class 4 felony, punishable by 1 to 4 years in prison. The victim filed a petition for an order of protection April 28th, in which she submitted a note he wrote that said, "The victim's name needs to die. I wish I could choke her to death. Whore, slut," and then an expletive. She wrote in the petition that Dagg came to her workplace 2 weeks earlier and yelled at her in front of other people. The emergency order of protection was granted that day, directing Dagg to refrain from contact with the victim. The order was then extended for 2 years. Additional charges were filed against Dagg on May 28th, including another felony stalking count and 1 count of violation of an order of protection. He was arrested in that case June 2nd, then released from jail June 3rd after posting another $1,000. He was ordered to wear a GPS bracelet. On June 6th, Dagg was arrested after he approached the victim at a bar and at a friend's residence and drove past her residence multiple times. His bond was set at $50,000, but he posted bond and was released. He was arrested again on Thursday on new charges, including aggravated stalking. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Reagan Ratke filed a successful petition to deny bond for Dagg. From Decatur, man killed in early Friday traffic accident identified. A Decatur man died early Friday as the result of being struck by a car in the eastbound lane of the 1000 block of East Grand Avenue. Laval Love, 32, of Decatur, was pronounced dead at 2:52 a.m. Friday at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana as a result of his injuries. Decatur police had earlier said Love was 42. Decatur police were notified at 12:23 a.m. Friday of a traffic crash. A 21-year-old man had struck Love with his car while Love was seated on the roadway. The driver of the car was not injured and was not impaired, police said. It is unknown why Love was seated in the roadway. Love was transported to Decatur Memorial Hospital and transferred to Carle, where he died. The Decatur Police Department Fatal Accident Investigation Team is investigating the crash along with the Champaign County Coroner's Office. No autopsy is planned, though an inquest will be held at a later date. And now from the editorial page, what the legislature did accomplish. The Illinois General Assembly failed to produce a balanced state budget during its regular session, an act required by the state constitution. But that doesn't mean legislators wasted their days. They passed some important stuff, ranging from pushing for the restoration of Pluto's status as a planet to making sure the state has an official vegetable, pie, and even polka song. It's not entirely fair to be too critical of these actions. They probably took little time, and these resolutions and bills are obviously important to someone. But then, so is a balanced state budget. Some examples of what they accomplished. A House resolution calling for the restoration of Pluto as a full-fledged planet. Governor Bruce Rauner probably wants to send some legislators to Pluto, but this has been an issue floating around the State House for a few years. That's because Clyde Tombaugh, the man who discovered Pluto, was born in Streeter. Pluto was demoted from planet to minor planet in 2006 by the International Astronomical Union. Past legislatures have also considered resolutions to make Pluto a planet again, which have been mostly ignored by the Astronomical Union. A House resolution naming the state's official polka song. Because every state needs an official polka song. The song, Polka Celebration, was written and composed by Chicago native Eddie Blazanchik Sr., who won a Grammy for the tune in 1986. Bills to designate the pumpkin pie as the official state pie and sweet corn as the official state vegetable. Now, we have nothing against pumpkin pie or sweet corn. Both are grown in great quantities in the state. A House resolution requiring rest areas to stock their machines with at least two healthy snacks. Here's where the legislature could use its imagination. Why not require every rest area to sell pumpkin pie and sweet corn? Now we're on to something. A bill that would create a monarch butterfly license plate to raise money to plant more milkweed, which will help boost the population of the state's official butterfly. The monarch was declared the state's official butterfly 30 years ago, after a lobbying effort by students at Decatur's Dennis School. But the state has too many license plates. The monarch does not need more milkweed habitat, but we don't see how a license plate accomplishes that. Milkweed seeds might do the trick. A bill that would allow meat processors to butcher exotic game gunned down at places like Ted Nugent's Ranch in Michigan. We didn't even know that was an issue, but it's good to know that the legislature is on top of it. We hope someday soon to write an editorial praising a compromise that has put the state on a sound financial track. Until then, it's nice to know that the General Assembly is trying to sort out some of these pressing issues. An article from Monticello, written by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review staff writer. The state sues Monticello over wastewater discharge incident. The Illinois Attorney General's office has filed a lawsuit against the city of Monticello, alleging that it dumped more than 800,000 gallons of wastewater, including raw sewage, into storm drains and channels that empty into the Sangamon River following a heavy rainstorm in July. The suit, filed on behalf of the State Environmental Protection Agency, asks the court to prevent the city from further incidents of illegal dumping and to pay a fine, court costs, and attorney's fees. According to the state's complaint, filed in Piatt County Circuit Court on June 4th, a rainfall of 3 inches occurred July 12th in Monticello. On that day, Monticello pumped approximately 867,000 gallons of untreated sewage, wastewater, and stormwater from 5 manholes throughout Monticello in order to prevent sewage from backing up into residential buildings, the complaint said. The manholes from which the sewage were pumped were located at South Independence Street, just south of West Marion Street, the intersection of West Monroe and South Irving Streets, Front Street and Cedar Street. The sewage was pumped for more than 7 hours, the complaint said. On July 14th, Illinois EPA received a complaint from a resident about overflows and noxious odors related to the July 12th discharge. The same day, Monticello treatment plant operator notified EPA of the sewage pumping and discharges that occurred 2 days earlier. The EPA issued a violation notice in August, citing the city for creating a water pollution hazard, creating offensive conditions, unauthorized discharge of contaminants, and system reliability deficiencies. Monticello responded in October that its wastewater treatment plant was incapable of handling precipitation events similar to the July 12th occurrence. Upgrades were necessary, but until they could be implemented, the city would be unable to meet its capacity operation requirement. Monticello Mayor Chris Corey said the city council has been considering possible solutions for several years, including a new water treatment plant. The wastewater treatment plant was built in 1938 and has exceeded its life expectancy, Corey said. When you pile stormwater on its basic operation, it falls short. The city has been responsible in looking at all the solutions. Corey said he has been advised to refrain from addressing specific details outlined in the lawsuit, but he said the city has been addressing many infrastructure needs associated with water management. The recent improvements include a water detention basin east of the middle school, downtown alleys with improved stormwater drainage, and a new water tower on the city's north edge. The city also plans to install a manhole near a point where creeks converge near the Viobin plant. No court date has yet been set in the case. In an article written by Huey Freeman of the Herald and Review staff, entitled Spirit Inspires 500, and it leads with a picture of 7 small children running a race with the caption, "A special kids run, let everyone be involved at the start of the Adam Carter Memorial Fun Run Walk in Fairview Park." From Decatur. Almost every time a child dies, there are stories about what a wonderful kid he was, someone who didn't complain about his illness. Adam Carter, who died at age 12 after a short battle with cancer, actually was that type of youngster. About 500 people came Saturday to honor the memory of Adam, a Holy Family school student who loved playing football, fishing, and attending St. Louis Cardinals games. Proceeds from the 3rd annual race will benefit charities important to Adam and his family. At the 5K run walk in Fairview Park, Shannon Carter, Adam's mother, recalled how he grew up playing in that park and usually wanted to stay there as long as possible. "While he was going through treatments, he liked to come out here and fish," she recalled. It was fitting that the family decided to hold a run in his honor because he was a speedy runner who played fullback and outside linebacker on the junior Bulldogs. Football was his favorite sport to play, Carter said. If they got him the ball and he got away from the pack, he was in. He was hoping to run track the summer following his fifth grade school year, but he was diagnosed with cancer that January, shortly after he celebrated his 11th birthday. His mother said she tried to teach him to ride a bicycle, but he threw it down in frustration and said, "I'd rather run anyway." The phrase, "I'd rather run anyway," is engraved on the medals of the Adam Carter Memorial Run. Adam's favorite sport to watch was baseball. The Carters made sure he was a Cardinals fan, bringing him to his first game on September 26, 1998, the game at which Mark McGwire hit his 67th and 68th home runs. Adam was 8 months old. He was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, a type of childhood cancer, in February 2009. The cancer spread to his brain, and doctors operated on him 3 times. He also underwent radiation and chemotherapy treatments. Adam never complained about his illness except when he thought it would interfere with the request granted to him through the Make-A-Wish Foundation. It was April 14, 2010. He was feeling weak, but he had been looking forward to his day at Busch Stadium. The foundation sent a limousine for him, along with nurses, one at a time for each side of the state line. His wish was to be the coach for the day for the Cardinals, Carter recalled. Adam was not feeling good, but when he was on the field before the game, he perked up. His favorite player, Albert Pujols, approached him as he sat in the wheelchair because of partial paralysis on his left side as a side effect of his surgery. "You're the coach," Pujols told him. "Tell me what I need to do." "Well, you're doing fine," Adam told him. Pujols gave him his batting glove. Matt Holliday gave him one of his bats. The foundation gave him a baseball jersey, Coach Carter 1, which the players signed. Cardinals manager Tony La Russa came over to encourage him. "I have my best guys playing for you," La Russa said. Adam's team beat the Astros 2-1. He died 9 days later. "He was a very happy-go-lucky kid," Carter said. "A happy kid. A good friend to everybody." At Holy Family School, he won the award for Outstanding Christian in his grade every year, kindergarten through fifth grade. They have renamed it the Adam Carter Outstanding Christian Award now, Carter said. Before the run began, Taylor Wilson, a Millikan University senior, received a medal from the Medals for Metal organization for courage in her battle with a rare blood disorder, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura. Wilson, a Mount Zion High School graduate, was diagnosed just before her senior year. She has fought back toward a normal life, with her illness now in remission. Carter said she appreciates that people came out to the running events to remember her son. "It's a good way to keep his memory alive," she said. And this has been Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review on June 15th, 2015. I hope you have a terrific day. Thank you.